ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Okay, so we're on page, I think, 34-35. On 2.3 Shloka Anusharanam, summary of the verses of chapter 2. Srila Sukadev Goswami begins this chapter by relating to Maharaj Parikit the example of Brahmadeva, the demigod of creation. He meditated upon the Virat Roop to dispel the fog of forgetfulness of his duty to the Lord as the Rajaguna avatar of his creative impetus. His mind purified by contemplating the Virat, Brahma once again identified himself with the Lord's original power to create. His vision in mystic trance of the universal form became the archetype of his own secondary creation. Thus was Brahma able to reconstruct the universe. Nimisha. In Bhagavatam 411 purport, Srila Prabhupada neatly sums up the relationship between Brahma's creation, Visarga, and the Lord's creation, Sarga. The Supreme Lord himself does the real creation by agitating his material energy. And then by his order, Brahma, the first living creature in the universe, attempts to create the different planetary systems and their inhabitants, expanding the population through his progeny. Like Manu and other progenitors of living entities who work perpetually under the order of the Supreme Lord. Yeah. So here it's interesting, Prabhupada uses the word attempts to create. In other words, he's not actually the creator, but by the Lord's blessing, then he is able to get results. Right? It's the Lord's potency that's actually working. Right? So he attempts means he surrenders to the Lord, tries to have the proper attitude, and in this way then something happens. Does that make sense? Because if he just creates, then it means he's independently doing. But here he's not actually independent. Right? He himself must, with the Lord's blessing only, then he has the potency to actually get something done. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah? Then Sukadev goes on to warn that a student of the Vedas ought not be bewildered by the scriptural glorification of the apparently wonderful features of the cosmic creation. Those who slip into such bewilderment think the only purpose of the Vedas is to direct them towards the different sense enjoyments on offer in different stations within the material universe. For example, the kingdoms of heaven. While Shastra may superficially praise the glories of life in higher material atmospheres to attract persons of lusty demeanor to religiosity, the actual goal of the Vedas is the attainment of the spiritual world. Knowing this, an enlightened soul should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life. How then should one live? Sukadeva approves a life of renunciation of even standard material amenities. One may sleep on the earth instead of a bed, resting his head on his arm instead of a pillow. His palms can serve well enough as a cup. The skins of trees can be accepted as clothing. The trees also provide ample fruits for food. A renunciate on the path of self and God realization need not at all flatter householders for his survival. He should do more in rendering service to the Lord than mere pantheistic meditation on the Virat Roop. Nimesha. One may take note that Vedanta Sutra, Adhyaya 4, Pada 3, presents the path of liberation such as Sukadev will in this chapter from verses 22 to 30. Oh, much as, okay. They present the path of liberation much as Sukadeva Goswami will in this chapter from verses 22 to 23. In these verses, Sukadeva traces the ascension of the meditator in stages from earth up to Brahmaloka, and finally to the spiritual realm of the Lord. But this path, which Srila Prabhupada termed gradual in the previous chapter, purport 32, is said in verse 22 of the present chapter before yogis who retain some desire for material improvement or mastery of mystic cities. Take careful note of Srila Sukadev Goswami's personal recommendation of the direct method of devotional service, which he expounds both before and after verses 22 and 30. Thus the Bhagavatam is not only a commentary upon Vedanta, but the only divine literature, literary vehicle that can transport one beyond the range of Vedanta. Hence, Srila Prabhupada states in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 18, as long as one is within the limited jurisdiction of fruitive activities, or is involved in mental speculation, he may perhaps be eligible to study or teach the theoretical knowledge of Vedanta Sutra, but he cannot understand the supreme, eternal, transcendental, completely liberated vibration of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One who has achieved perfection in chanting the transcendental Hare Krishna vibration does not have to separately learn the philosophy of Vedanta Sutra. Sukadeva Goswami advises Maharaj Parikshit to serve the Sopa soul within one's heart, for he is the eternal, unlimited, ultimate goal of life. By worshipping him, freed from conditioned existence. Only a materialist will neglect such thinking. Okay, that's verses 1 to 7. So we see that first part he was talking about Brahma, the creation, that Krishna is agitating the pradhan by his glance, because otherwise it's dead matter. It doesn't move. It doesn't do anything. So by his glance with the false ego, the living entities, and the time factor, right? False ego like this, then that enters. And by that entering, thank you, that entering, then it becomes agitated. So then it separates into the 24 elements. Then Brahma, then by his meditation and by his sincere endeavor, then he is able to recreate, right? Means create what was there before. Means what is in all the other previous universes. So whatever goes on, this has already been done, right? The tendency is when one has a very strong emotional experience, one feels it is something unique that no one else has or experiences. No, it's typical. Everybody has exactly the same thing. It just may be in a different situation. Because the situation is different, we think it's different. Right? Does that make sense? I give you a rasgulla to eat here. Then I take someone else up to the first floor and he eats it there. And then another person on the roof and another one out in the field. Right? We laugh because we know everyone will get the same taste, same experience. But actually, everyone thinks theirs is unique. That moment with the child or with the husband or wife or like that, that's unique. No one else has that. Everyone else has exactly the same. In fact, the dogs have it. Right? You never seen male, female dogs there? They smile, they're happy, they play, they wrestle. It's exactly the same. That's the thing. That's why it says recreated as before. Because it's exactly the same thing. But if we weren't in the illusion that it was the same thing, we wouldn't keep on endeavoring with it and going through. We'd be, right? Can you imagine? It's just like this. Governments have a lot of problem that they have people that are unemployed and dissatisfied. Right? So what do? They steal, they break things, they become criminals because they don't care. Right? So there's no question that they will follow the law. So they have to be in some way satisfied. So what do? They create all these big sports things and big galas and melas and things like that that will involve people's attention. Right? Then there's more of a chance of affecting discipline. Does that make sense? So unless the living entity actually is, in one sense, satisfied in the material endeavor, doesn't mean he'll be satisfied in his results, but he's satisfied in the material endeavor, then only there's a possibility of establishing order. Does that make sense? So that's why then Prabhupada then goes to say that one should not be enamored by this, because the material energy, how it's functioning, then even though it's amazing, the more we study, the more we can see the subtleties of it and its amazing aspects of it. But we should not become attracted by it or bewildered by it, that it's something special. Oh, someone can see the energies or the auras, or you know, you can understand this. That's supposed to be normal. right? If you weren't, that's because you were a little thick-headed, right? But as you become purified, then that thick-headed, the head becomes a little thinner, right? More brain, less skull, right? So then one is able to appreciate these things. Devotees can understand these things. They're like this. So that's not a, it's not a special thing. Because if one becomes attracted by these, one will get distracted, right? That's the thing, the yogis, they go up to Brahma Loka. But they are still attracted by mystic powers and their ability to actually help others, you know, or control others, whatever is their position. Does that make sense? There's that little bit, it's very subtle, but it keeps them here. That's the whole point. They don't get out of the material world. Does that make sense? So one has to be very careful of that, because all these things are presented in such a way to make them attractive, because we say two things. One is attractive. Better they're attracted to something that makes them follow God's rules, right? Rather than not be, just being a nonsense, being a criminal, they're attracted by the rules of karma, jnana, or yoga, right? At least they're following the Vedic order. So those who are properly situated, then things will work nicely for them, right? Isn't it? Just like you're all here in India, right? Now in India, you don't really, at least, okay, let's say, I won't extend this too far, but you don't mind walking around inside Mayapur, and possibly you don't even mind walking outside the front gate in your dhoti and stuff, right? Isn't it? Okay, but in the West that may or may not be so comfortable, right? Things to get to eat here. It's like in India, anything you buy in these shops, then, you know, it has a little, you know, green or brown dot on it, saying it's either vegetarian or it's not. Still, it's always good to check the ingredients, but just the concept, like, do they have like that in America? Or in England or anywhere else, that you know that this is vegetarian? That the government puts regulations that it has to say it's vegetarian? Right? So that's the whole point, is that it makes it easier, right? You have flower people that are there selling flowers, this, that. Like in Vrindavan, right outside the temple, you have flowers. You know, so many things that are just easy that we need, right? You can buy dhotis here. You can't buy them in the West. You can't buy saris there. So because people are following the path of karma and jnana from the Vedas, therefore the necessities of life for the devotees are easily available. Does that make sense? So they're getting the benefit that they're following God's laws. So it's progressive. But for the devotees, then that's the natural culture. I think the Maharaj is coming. Okay? Does that make sense? Right? So, but one's not supposed to become distracted by it, because it's not for the devotees. Right? It's used, but it's not to get enamored by. Does that make sense? So, the Vedic, all the different aspects, your astrology, your Ayurveda, your this, your that, it's there to use, but not become distracted by. Right? It doesn't become overly prominent in one's life. Right? Does that make sense? Right?
That makes sense to me.
Okay, good. Okay, so, like that. Okay, then he makes the point, Prabhupada makes the point, is that someone who is expert in the path of karma and jnana is qualified to teach in those areas. Right? It's not that they're not, you know, intelligent or they're not Brahmins, but they won't understand the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So that they shouldn't be teaching, right? That's, you know, just like if someone's a doctor, he shouldn't be professing law. He should talk about, you know, medicine. So in the same way as karmis, jnanis, they may be qualified. You may have academics, they're very qualified, but they should stick to their area and stay out of our area, right? That they don't need to do. That's there. And so then the final point he makes is that, therefore, in this is that through meditation of Virat Rup, Brahma was able to create. One should not become distracted by that meditation or by the abilities that come from appreciating the Lord's potencies. Right? So one should surrender to the super soul. Now one may say, well, for us, we're not interested in super soul, we're interested in Bhagavan. So for us, then the element here of super soul is that's Aniruddha. Aniruddha means the ultimate goal, right? So then that also in Brajalila translates into Gopinath, right? The Lord of the Gopis. So he is who we're supposed to be meditating upon. You see? You understand? So that goes through there. It's not that, oh, here it's super soul. That's why in the Bhagavatam, whatever language or wording is used, it doesn't matter, because actually it's making the same point. But depending upon the situation in which it's being discussed, it will use the appropriate language. Does that make sense? Right? Husband and wife are sitting alone together. No one's there. Right? They'll use one language. But if they're sitting there in front of friends or with kids, they'll say the same thing, but using appropriate language. Does that make sense? But someone who knows that science knows they're saying the same thing. Does that make sense? So here, when they talk about super soul, then we understand it's Aniruddha, means we understand that's Gopinath. Does that make sense? But it's being discussed in relationship to Brahma and the creation. Right? So therefore, then you're going to use that terminology. Right? Later in the 10th canto, he's going to use different terminology. Does that make sense? Because the situation is different. But it's the same thing. That's why there isn't such a thing as, well, this part of the Bhagavatam is nectar and that part's not. No, it's all nectar. It's all nectar, more nectar, most nectar. Because the most nectar means it's more direct. And if it's just nectar, means it's saying the same thing, but the wording is such that you may need to understand. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay. Maharaj, shall we finish up then?
Yeah, please.
Where are you?
We're on page, I think on yours, 35.
Is it that Shloka Nishan of Vedanta Sutra you were just talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, now we're now on the 8 to 14. Like that. Down at the bottom, superior to Virat meditation is meditation upon the super soul.
So, shall I take me back?
Yes, to...
Yeah, we just want to finish up...
Page 17, no?
Page 17? Yes.
17, 18, depending upon the book you have.
Two editions. Because... there was a section of the first chapter's study guide in which we're sort of cross-referencing a traditional Western philosophical positions with the four vyuhas, the full philosophical meaning of the chatur vyuha. And we had gone through speaking about, just to review, because it's been days since we talked about this, review the relationship of the, what is known as Latin as mundus intelligibilis, or the view of the world as essentially being intellect. So that's still very much a part of modern Western thought, intellectuals. You see, what was that? Atman, when you take, you got problems. And, according to your frame of mind, you see the world. So intellectuals tend to see the world in intellectual terms. See, I make a reference, Plato. Plato, the Greek philosopher, ancient Greek philosopher, Plato is the archetypical example of this in the West, is that he saw the essence of the world as being buddhi, or intellect. He was actually very much influenced by an earlier philosopher, sort of semi-mythical figure, But he is known to be the first person in Greek culture to have been termed philosopher. He lived, apparently they say, 600 years before Christ. His name was Pythagoras. And a lot of modern mathematics, geometry, goes back to him. The Pythagorean theorem, if you went to, I don't know what you, if these boys know anything about that, they're probably learning the Vedic terminology, but we were taught the Pythagorean theorem concerning triangles. So, anyway,
A plus A squared.
Plato would speak about truth and beauty as being the ultimate reality, but he was talking in mathematical and geometric, maybe sort of very intellectual. He was not talking about Shyamchandra Sri Krishna. He's not talking about personal form. So, practically speaking, he was an impersonalist, but he was not a rupavadi. He did not bring everything down to just no form at all. It was intellectual forms, or what he called ideal forms. So that is obviously related to Lord Pradyumna, who is the lord of the intelligence. And, well, I explained this, I don't want to go over this in detail, but he's actually the source of the Sorshakal, the 16 primary ingredients that make up creation. And these could be taken as geometric or mathematical forms in higher dimensions, because they are the Lord's form, but they separate from him, and they become the ingredients that the demigods use to put this world together, and that's why this world is so attractive. Because nothing else in expansion of the 16 aspects of the Lord's own form. Then we spoke of the mundus sensibilis philosophers, or the pragmatists. Who deal with what they call the practical world. This mundus sensibilis means the world that we can perceive through the senses, and the mind is the center of the senses. So it means essentially monomaya. Mundus intelligibilis is actually sandhya between monomaya and vijnanamaya. There's more accent on intellectual speculation, but it's not beyond the range of the mind. And monomaya is just straight monomaya. Is you go from eating to use of the body, like people like to go out, nice restaurant, and then eat nice food, and then they go to a ballet or something, ballet performance, and see nice cultured monomaya demonstration, pranamaya demonstration, movement of the body in beautiful ways. This is also related to art. And then they think about that, and they discuss these refined experiences. And this is basically monomaya life. And Prabhupada says material civilization does not go beyond that. So Plato, Platonic thought is the beginning of going beyond that. I mentioned Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are those like scientists who just study Shakti. They're Shaktas, they're just a type of modern tantric. And then there's a kind of philosophical Nirvisheshavadi at the second stage, who by his study of matter comes to the conclusion that there must be some force beyond it, but he doesn't have a clear idea of what it is. But he may try to express it in mathematical terms or something. That is like today's physicists. It's very ironic. The word physicist coming from physical makes you think that these scientists would be concerned with gross matter. But I think it was Dutakamaguru who pointed out that actually the scientists of today who are most concerned with gross matter are the psychologists. We're supposed to be the scientists of the mind, because they think that mental functions are all products of environment. In other words, gross material environment and chemicals in the brain, gross material factors. And it's the physicists who are supposedly studying the gross matter that are getting into, as I was explaining the other day, even now, mystical concepts, concepts that go beyond the logic of matter. It's actually illogical. It's a kind of illogical logic in which it's accepted that, say, you know, one subatomic particle can be, this is called the quantum bilocation. One subatomic particle can be in two places at once. I have a book in my tumbling towers of books called The Non-Local Universe, in which a scientist, a philosopher, they took 15 years to write this book, and they're explaining how everything is interrelated. Nothing is actually separate from anything in this world on a subtlemost mystical platform. And it's very interesting because if we consider the message of the Bhagavatam, that Sri Krishna is the basis of everything, then they have actually stumbled upon a truth, although they have not clearly focused understanding of the truth. Then we spoke of the extramundus, and this we related to Sankarshan, which is mysticism. Extramundus means beyond this world. And just for fun's sake, we gave the example of the conjurer Harry Houdini, who is probably the most famous person in recent history from escaping from, you know, he'd be bound up with chains and put in an iron box, and the box would be chained up and locked from outside and dropped from a pier into the ocean. And then 3 minutes later, he'd be out of it. And no one could ever figure out how he was able to do that. And he used to spend his time exposing pseudo-mystics, people who, mentalists and channelers and so on. He was able to detect their fakery. And so he thought he was so expert in escaping from impossible situations that he promised his wife that after I die, I'll get in touch with you. Didn't happen. So that's can be related to the Sankarshan level, which is the level of yoga nidra, a mystic trance. This is the pragya, the awakened self-consciousness of self as being different from the body, yet the body is still there, but in potential form. In other words, it's not... I think Ramanujacharya has an interesting term for this. Yoga... I've forgotten the second word. But before you come to the actual Turiya platform, when you go from Jagrata, wakefulness, to Turiya, there's an in-between state Ramanujacharya speaks of, which is the what mystic yogis perceive. And so Sankarshan is Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is non-different, Prabhupada said, same to same as Sadashiva. And all the Mahasiddhas, as we see in the Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita, they take shelter of Mahavishnu Loka or Sadashiva Loka. That's the boundary of the material world and spiritual world. So they clearly understand they're not the body. They shut down the senses and even the mental faculties. The Buddhi is fixed in samadhi, but they're still not quite free of false ego. So they can come back to the material world to become so-called avatars and wonder workers and all of that. And this way get entangled in material existence. So now we want to come to that long-awaited fourth issue. We also mentioned Aristotle's computer. I'm not going to say anything more about that. I've talked enough about that, but if you're interested, if you're new to the class, If you have my edition of the study guide, to reach page 16 and 17 is very interesting, because you see how even the computer is a very ancient concept. It's nothing new. Aristotle, of course, is a kind of mystical computer. But basically the same idea. So, and behind that, interestingly enough, is Nirvishesha Shunyavadi philosophy. And I've read the writings of many computer theorists of modern time, and they come to the same conclusion. That, you know, virtual reality, we speak of virtual reality, they say one day you'll be able to put on a suit with goggles and earphones, and the suit will be tuned to your sense perceptions, and turn on a computer and you'll enter into a three-dimensional computerized world. And then they say, this is actually what's going on anyway. The world we experience now is nothing more than a virtual image, which, you know, in a sense there's some truth in it, but who's perceiving it? That's one question. You explain all this arrangement, but how do you explain the consciousness that's perceiving it? And then you're explaining this arrangement that requires so much intelligence. I mean, any computer scientists who could develop such a system would be hailed as being wonderfully intelligent. And if you say that the world is also such just virtual reality, but then you go on to say it all happened by accident, well, I'm sorry, that's what we say is a load of BS. I won't elaborate on that. It doesn't make sense. Intelligence is required to create computer-generated virtual reality, but no intelligence is required to create cosmic virtual reality. That is just absolute stupidity. So we go on now. Reading on my edition of Study Guide, page 17, near the bottom, the bottom one-third. Now, for a balanced package that allows whatever is progressive in the above, in other words, the previous three philosophical positions, to smoothly mature into genuine God consciousness, Srila Prabhupada prescribes the Varna Ashram system of society. Now, you may wonder how that comes about, so let's explain. We have a quote here from Srimad Bhagavatam, this very second canto, a little ahead in chapter 9, purport to verse 36, where Srila Prabhupada says, "And therefore the complete social construction is the body of the Lord." This is all we've been talking about in these three previous phases, is the body of the Lord, as Aniruddha, or as Pradyumna, or as Sankarshan. Now we're coming to the Vasudeva platform. "Therefore the complete social construction is the body of the Lord, and all the parts of the body, namely the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, are meant to serve the Lord's whole body conjointly. Otherwise the parts become unfit to be coordinated with the supreme consciousness of oneness. Universal consciousness is factually achieved by coordinated service of all concerned to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that alone can ensure total perfection." That's excerpted from one of the, you know, Titanic Chatur Shloki purports. And this has always been, this passage has always been, since I first read it, whenever, 25 years ago, or whenever it was, this has always had a lot of meaning for me, because Prabhupada uses this sort of New Agey type, you know, terminology, universal consciousness, and so on. And these philosophers, speculators, that's what they're trying to achieve. But Prabhupada here is saying, the only way you'll ever be able to achieve it is to do something practical. Spiritual, practical, Vedic. Take up your position, whatever it may be, in Varna Ashram Dharma, and do your duty, according to Guru Shastra Sadhu. And then you'll realize all that these different philosophers we've been talking about before are attempting to realize by their different speculations. So, this is the Vedic version of what is known in the West as synoptic philosophy, an all-inclusive worldview by which the relationship of all things with one another are made evident in accordance with basic theistic principles that pervade the universe. This synoptic, word synoptic, you can easily understand it. Optic refers to the eye. Syn, we have such S-Y-N, we have such words as synthesis. Synthesis means to bring many different parts together in harmony so that they all work as one system. So this is synoptic, to see the world as one system. You see? That is accomplished by Varna Ashram Dharma, a subject matter which, of course, His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj has volumes and volumes to speak about, but please let me just finish here. The sanctification of human life by bringing society into harmony with the universe that, when properly understood, is a form of the Lord, is perhaps most properly expressed in Western terminology by the word cosmotheism. And then I note that I said is perhaps most properly expressed. Perhaps most properly expressed, because there are those who claim to be cosmotheists who take the world to be a synonym, who take the word cosmotheism to be a synonym for pantheism, the notion that anything and everything in the universe is equally God. That is not correct. That is not the true sense of cosmotheism. Cosmotheism is that there is nothing in the universe that is not connected to, not controlled by, not governed by the Lord. And yet, at the same time, the term theism, you see, in the original Greek sense, means that it's just like in the Purusha Shukta, that the Lord pervaded the universe, and then by, what is it, by the distance of 10 fingers?
Yeah.
Yes, he was beyond. Yeah. So actually, if you look in a good philosophical dictionary, look up the term theism, you will find that. Theism is the philosophy that God is not only immanent throughout everything, but He is also transcendental. So cosmotheism means the cosmos is pervaded by the Lord. But the theism part means, at the same time, He is beyond the universe. And that is the absolute. Because absolute, which is a term conceived in the 14th century by, the name escapes me, some European philosopher. He, you know, all these terms that have existed for millennia, yugas in the Vedas, these concepts, they have their beginning dates in European history. 14th century AD, someone thought of, defined the absolute as that which simultaneously includes everything and is also beyond everything. So that's a very nice, that is Veda Abheda Tapa, you see, in one word. That's actually the original meaning of the term absolute. That which includes everything and transcends everything. So this pantheism pantheism again, this is this idea, Prabhupada gave the example of, you take God, Theos, Deus, Deva, referring to Greek, Latin, and Sanskrit, and take him as a piece of paper and just cut him up into pieces and spread those pieces out. That's pan. Pan means everywhere, meaning everywhere in the material world. Like Prabhupada explained the term pandemonium, you know, when there's a lot of confusion, you know, if a bomb, a firecracker were to go off in the midst of this class, there'd be a lot of shouting, you know, obviously a lot of wild noises coming from that corner, and you know, everyone would jump and be excited, you know, and we'd call this pandemonium. But the literal meaning of the term pandemonium, as Prabhupada explained, is demons everywhere. Demons are pervading everything and creating disturbances. So, to finish up, the Vedic conclusion is that the Supreme Lord is Adi Purusha Sri Krishna, who is personally located in Goloka Vrindavan. At the same time, by the expansions of his Achincha Shakti, he impersonally pervades the whole material creation. Until one arrives at this conclusion, one remains at risk of falling into one or more of the confused philosophical positions described in section 1.7 of this study guide. So that's the end of that. My quite a while through.
Six serious interruptions, but yeah.
So we continue now, Maharaj, please.
Or go back where we were.
Yeah, go back.
Okay, page 35-36. Pardon? Superior to Virat Rupa meditation is meditation upon the Supersoul, who is conceived by some as measuring only 8 inches and being transcendentally situated within the heart of every living entity. Nimisha. Concerning the size of the Lord's transcendental form, the second ray of light of Sripad Raghava Das Goswami's Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash has this to say. That Sri Krishna's form is not material is also described in Maha Korma Purana. Quote, the Supreme Lord's form is neither large nor small, but at the same time is supremely large and supremely small. It is completely colorless, and at the same time it manifests various colors. All these contradictions exist within the Supreme Lord's form. The Lord displays 4 hands, and in them holds a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club. His lotus eyes are beautiful. He wears yellowish garments, jewel-set ornaments, and garlands of fresh flowers. His lotus feet are placed over the hearts of the mystics who are fixed upon him in meditation. One should thus concentrate in meditation upon him, beginning from his lotus feet and progressing, as the intelligence becomes purified, to his smiling face. The purpose of meditating upon the Virat Rup, as Srila Sukadeva Goswami made clear in the previous chapter, is to assist our developing a service attitude to the Supreme Lord.
As if means you see the Lord in everything, we could come to the conclusion that, you know, it's all here for me to enjoy. Since it is Krishna, it's fine to enjoy it. But the actual purpose is we see Krishna everywhere, so if it's Krishna everywhere, then that means everything should be connected to him. It should develop a service attitude in every aspect of our life, rather than just in a part of it. Does that make sense? Right. So that's why the importance of not being enamored, because if you could become enamored by it, that enamored means that your attachment to it is very great. Does that make sense? There's an interest in it. Then when the intelligence becomes covered, one becomes attached to something. That attachment increases, then there is consideration. Right? It means you're careful about it. No one should say anything bad about it. When there's consideration increases, there's confidence. Right? Because if someone is regularly considerate, then one becomes confident. When confidence increases, it becomes being one becomes enamored. Right? So those who become overly confident about the material, the subtleties of the material energy, become enamored by them, or whatever it is, even the gross. Does that make sense? So they're warning to avoid this becoming enamored. Right? That the point is it is Krishna, but don't become enamored by that. That's nothing. This is only a portion of his potency. Right? The real thing is the person behind it. Right? So therefore, then it's brought to the super soul. So one should then, seeing the potencies pervading everywhere, then one should come to the conclusion of wanting to serve that person who has made such arrangements. Right? That's the natural thing. It means if you find out someone is taking care of you and doing everything for you, the natural thing is to want to reciprocate that. Right? So that's through service. Does that make sense? Because if you really understand, you know it's because they're arranging it, only you're getting your result, not because you're something special. Right? Does that make sense? So then the proper thing is one takes up the worship of the super soul. Like that. So the meditation on the Virat Rupa is to bring us to this personal understanding, not that it should stand on its own. Is that okay? Right? Because we see Brahma meditated and then he saw Krishna. So that's the proper application. He's our acharya. So he started there. He was in ignorance. He meditated upon the universal form. Then he could see Krishna. So that's actually the use, proper use of this meditation on the universal form. Okay. Any questions on that? No? Anything? No? Okay. If a yogi wishes to voluntarily leave his body, he should sit comfortably and follow the following process. Through meditation, he should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into himself, the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction. He thus ceases all other activities. This stage is transcendental. It is called labdo pashanti. This state is actually the spiritual world, but indirectly it is described as a state unaffected by time. Goodness, passion, ignorance, false ego, the material causal ocean, or material nature. Nimisha. Also termed Atmarama and Brahmabhuta. Prasanatma, labdo pashanti, is the goal of Jnanamisra Bhakti. excuse me. A devotee of this caliber aspires to taste the soul's joy of being released from the distress of material identification. Labdo Pashanti is never to be confused with Rasagraha. See Bhagavatam 1.17.19, in which the devotee's joy is Smarna Mukti Mukunda Angiri. Constant remembrance of the sweetness, rasa of the Lord's lotus feet, even though that devotee may apparently be fallen from the liberated position. In Prema Bhakti, the soul's eternal personal identity is termed Swarupo Palabdhi, as Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavatam 4.23.18 purport. The real identity of the individual soul lies in understanding or attaining the knowledge he is eternally a servant of Krishna. This understanding is called Swarupo Palabdhi. By culturing devotional service, the devotee gradually comes to understand his actual relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This understanding of one's pure spiritual position is called Swarupo Palabdhi. And when one obtains that stage, he can understand how he's related with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as a servant or friend or as a parent or conjugal lover. Desiring Labdo Pashanti, the yogi avoids all godlessness and keeps himself in absolute harmony with the Lord. He places the Lord's lotus feet within his heart and worships them at every moment. To leave this world, a yogi should be fixed in absolute realization. He must extinguish all material desires. He should give up his body through mystic practice, through yogic practice, while slowly pushing his life air upward from the navel to his heart. From there, the life air should be pushed to the chest, and from the chest to the root of the palate, and finally to the cerebral hole. He should then give up all material connections and go to the Supreme. So we see here an overlap of the the ideal yogi and less, but it's being done in means. In other words, if I can explain it in one explanation and I can get two meanings out of it, I will do that. Right? We do it all the time, though we don't know it. Just like you say, he won the war. But he won the war is actually, what is it, di-transitive. Right? It has two results. One is the battle itself was done, but at the same time as he gained victory over whatever it is that he's there. Or we milk the cow. Right? So we just think we got the milk in the bucket, but that means you also got the milk out of the cow. Right? To get it in the bucket, you have to get it out of the cow. We could have got it out of the cow into the ground. Right? But we got it out of the cow and into the bucket. So two things happening at once. So it's a common thing. So here in explanation, then we see that he's explaining the mystic yoga, but at the same time he's also explaining that connection to the Supreme. It means this labdho pashanti is you're experiencing the pleasure of being transcendental. Right? But Prabhupada's pointing out is the real thing, because the yogi is meditating upon the Lord, is this sarup of the labdhi.
Note that Srila Prabhupada says, this stage is transcendental. It is called labdho prashanti. The state... these are actually my words, but taken from directly from Prabhupada's purport. This state is actually the spiritual world. That's what Prabhupada says. But indirectly, it is described as a state unaffected by time, goodness, etc.
Yeah. You understand there's two things. In other words, when we say the devotee is liberated, we mean he's situated transcendentally in the Lord's pastimes. Right? Because that's real liberation. Right? Just like you could say somebody is, right, incarcerated. He's somehow or another in jail or in a very difficult situation he can't get out of. So, or, you know, it's like he's in a car crash and he's stuck in his car. Then they come and liberate him from the car. Right? Does that make sense? So it is a form of liberation, means a difficult situation you're freed from. But it could happen again. But real liberation means it won't happen again. You go back to Godhead, that's it. It's done. You can't come back. But anything less than that, you can. So it's used in that way, but when we talk about it, we mean the other thing. So since this is Bhagavatam, we know that that's all it means. Because if it's meaning the other one, that's called Mahabharata or other Vedic literatures. But Bhagavatam means it's actually only meaning the transcendental, the devotional interpretation. Though it can be applied, we understand, we also learn at the same time how the yogis work. Now in this, one would think, well, sometimes it's there because the material world is such a problem. But why is this distinction made? Let us say you invite someone to dinner, right? And it is a great endeavor to arrange this dinner, right? So much shopping, so much preparation, so much planning goes into this, right? Then the time comes, the person comes, the meal is served, the meal is finished serving, and then there's a great relief. Right? Now, if your happiness is simply, wow, that's done, that's over, did that, that went great, that's labdho prashanti. Right? If your actual pleasure is, after all that work, now this person that I've invited is very satisfied and happy, that's the other one. That's rasagraha. That's the sorupopa labdhi. You understand? So we can see the one, it's your attachment to your endeavor and getting rid of the pains of that is more. And the person is not actually so important. Right? Does that make sense?
If I could just add something quickly.
Yeah.
It's a very nice analogy Maharaj has given. Because it is pointed out here, I mentioned, since we're in the second canto, we've already covered this, perhaps not in the detail it deserves. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.17.19, in which Narada Muni speaks of the rasa graha devotee. And he says, even if he is apparently fallen, in other words, you know, looking at him and his activities, you would not conclude he's a liberated soul. But because he cannot forget, he's always remembering the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord, that experience he had when he was directly engaged in devotional service, he's actually considered better than the Labdha person. So, taking Maharaj's analogy, just like you might have such a dinner, and then you get in, a good relationship with that person. And then later on, you fall on hard times. You're no longer able to give such a nice dinner, but the friendship is there. And then your friend, you know, out of simply personal concern, love, he comes to take care of you. You've not forgotten him. He's not forgotten you. And then the relationship continues just on that platform. It's not dependent on serving samosas and nice puris and
Yeah, very good. Very good. You understand? Like that. So that's the difference. The one is that work's been done well, you feel good about it, you know, you've gotten out of the material world, you freed, you did your sadhana, great, now, you know, you revel in that. But the other one is actually to establish a personal relationship that, you know, whatever comes remains, you know, because the Lord doesn't forget. We forget, He doesn't forget. Okay. So then, when
So it's 9 o'clock and it's Friday, yes?
Friday, yes.
So we won't be seeing you for 2 days. Please have a very Krishna conscious weekend. Thank you very much for attending.
Yeah, and then work on all the assignments that were there for the first chapter.
Oh yeah, actually there's something I wanted to clarify. I wasn't here when the assignments were made. On section 194, the full credit, adult students only, this is on page 29. This is an extra credit question. And it's originally worded, 4 Western philosophical positions are presented in the study guide for this chapter. The technical terminology is mundus sensibilis, mundus intelligibilis, extramundus, and mundus phantasmata. But actually, I should have said 5 philosophical positions and included that last one we just talked about today, the synoptic. So this is an extra credit question. I kind of doubt anyone's going to deal with it anyway. If you do, please respond to all 5 issues, not just the 4. Thank you.